when the replay official did not stop the game?
I'm not going to comment on that. I'll get fined for the rest of my life if I get commented on that.
We had a great belief in our locker room. We didn't have to do anything special, just be us. I was so proud of this team. We had so much fun, it ought to be illegal.
Any idiot can say whatever they want, and they usually do, and they're negative. And all I see, to me, I've gotten to a point now when I see things like that, I feel sorry that those people feel that way, that their lives don't have the purpose, the passion, and the excitement and the enjoyment that some of us do.
Our purpose is to win, make no mistake about it, but it's to win the right way. And our goal, our stated goal, is going to be to win the Sun Belt, to win the SEC East.
Talk about the reception you received from the fan base. Did you ever think you'd be kissing and hugging babies at the tarmac when you got off the plane?
A lot better than another tarmac experience that I had. I didn't think of it. It was like an anniversary or something like that.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
I said in my press conference back in December that I didn't feel like there was anything in South Carolina that we lacked to be a championship program, that we had everything that we needed. I am even more convinced of that now after being there for 7 months.
Welcome in the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm flying solo for this episode, but don't worry, got a terrific guest lined up. We got Adam Luckett from Kentucky Sports Radio. Going to talk some Wildcat football, of course, but Adam really does a great job covering the entire SEC. So got a lot of SEC questions for him. He was just came back from SEC Media Days. He was the one that asked Saban about the 12 personnel, and Saban kind of had a little back and forth with him that went viral. So I think you guys are really going to appreciate this interview I had here with Adam. But before we get to that, you know, I don't think we've made a big enough deal about this. We harp on the fact that we're getting close to football. How about this? If you were unaware, I know we don't cover a lot of NFL on this show, but I believe it's this Thursday is the NFL Hall of Fame game. And that marks a milestone that I think we could all get excited about, because from here on out, all the way through the Super Bowl in February, we got football, at least one game a week until February. So, hey, this is the greatest time of the year. Training camps opening all across the SEC this week. So we're going to have tons and tons of content. But unfortunately, you know, we're going to get plenty of news like this. Biggest thing we got to hit on real quick before we get to our interview. Let's jump on down to Baton Rouge.
My honor to present the national championship trophy to Coach Ed Orgeron and the LSU Tigers.
Got some unfortunate LSU quarterback Miles Brennan. The team has confirmed suffered a significant injury to his left arm. He's going to require surgery. And there's a good chance Miles Brennan is done for the season, because according to Brody Miller of The Athletic, he's saying he's broken his humerus bone in his left arm. And I'm told that it's going to take about 2 or 3 months just for Miles Brennan to get back. And by that point, if Max Johnson lives up to the hype like I think he will, you know, there's just not going to be a place for Miles Brennan. They're not going to switch it over to him as well as the LSU could be doing here towards midway to the season, last bit of the season. So, hey, let's hope and pray Miles Brennan can make a full recovery. You know, I hate it for him. He's a guy that waited his time and then, of course, had the abdominal injury last year, suffered against Missouri. And when he was in there, man, he was really good. And I think that's overlooked by the fact how bad LSU's defense was, and certainly didn't do the offense any favors last year. But Miles Brennan, 1,200 yards, 11 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions in the 3 games that he played last year and started for the Tigers. A just really unfortunate loss last season due to injury. Now it looks like he's going to miss significant, if not all of the upcoming season. So really tough blow here. Silver lining, I hate to even use that term, because you never want to look at a bright side of someone getting injured here, but hey, that ends the debate there in Baton Rouge. It's going to be Max Johnson's team. He didn't win the competition the way he wanted to, but it's his time to run with it. So they're going into camp without these questions. Now on the other side of the coin here, with TJ Finley transferring to Auburn, suddenly LSU very, very thin at that quarterback position. Of course, they got Garrett Nussmeier, very high on the true freshman. But he's probably your backup, a guy that's never played college football. And Max Johnson, for as good as he was last year at the tail end, hell, he's only started two games. Of course, he's 2-0. So, again, I've been pumping the guy up all offseason. I'm not pumping the brakes on that. But all of a sudden, LSU's depth at the most important position in the game is razor thin right now. So we'll see if LSU maybe adds some kind of transfer. I wouldn't think to compete for the starting job, obviously, but maybe just add some depth. Maybe a G5 quarterback that is looking for an opportunity to add depth to LSU's roster. We'll see how that goes, but it'll be tough. I mean, LSU was already a little thin at that spot, so just hate it for Miles Brennan. I mean, guy, he bleeds LSU. This is one of those guys that certainly could have transferred when Joe Burrow came in. I mean, they essentially got Joe Burrow to start over this guy, and it's just never worked out for him, so I hate it for him. Now, one other thing before we get to our interview. Rumors are flying. Of course, this is to be expected. It's expansion season. Everybody jumping on the latest rumors all over Twitter, regardless of how credible the source is. And there was one going around that Clemson and Florida State had been interested in joining the SEC. And that was just flat out wrong from everything I've been told. Clemson has come out and denied it. And here's the deal. You got to be very careful where you get your information these days, particularly during this expansion talk. Adam McClintock, fan of the show, CFB professor, he put it best. And he put this out over the weekend. If you're unaware, and hell, I was unaware, I know I had briefly talked about Florida State's president making some interesting comments. But here's the deal. So Texas and Oklahoma, obviously already coming to the SEC, it's called grant of rights deal. That is through the 2025 season. That's why we keep talking about this 2025 date where Texas and Oklahoma are going to try to work their way out of it. Well, here's the deal in the ACC. All those teams, every single one of them, is locked in until 2036. So significantly longer than any of the Big 12 teams. And why is that important? In the ACC, in their contracts, going to that 2036 date, if a team like a Florida State or a Clemson were to leave the ACC, it doesn't matter for the SEC, Big Ten, Independent, whatever, for the next 15 years, any team that leaves the ACC, all the money, every single penny they get from television revenue goes back to the ACC. So, is it realistic to think Clemson and Florida State are going to join the SEC and then the next 15 years forfeit the largest chunk of money they got coming in? No, of course not. That would be ridiculous. 15 years, I'm saying. They would owe the entire thing to the ACC. So don't look for, unless the ACC blows up or something and it just doesn't exist anymore, outside of that, cannot see any of these teams jump into the ACC unless there's some kind of huge flaw in the contract. And as we're going to find out here with Texas and Oklahoma, these contracts are pretty stringent. So I do not look for a window for any of these ACC teams to be jumping to the SEC anytime soon. And that's been key to why Texas and Oklahoma are coming, because their deal is coming up in the next couple of years. And it certainly sounds like they think they can get out of it. So we'll see where that goes. But speaking of that, it's almost like I got to talk about Texas and Oklahoma here just quickly here. But the Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby and the Texas President Jay Hartzell, they were both speaking to the Texas state representatives today. It was a public thing. They had to come in and speak to him. And according to Texas President, the Longhorn Network is going away upon their arrival to the SEC. He didn't really clarify what that meant, but they're either going to get absorbed by the SEC network or just totally dissolve it, which is something that we've been saying is going to happen with Texas coming into the SEC. They were not going to let one school have their own network. You come into the SEC, you're part of the SEC network, or you don't have a network. And, you know, that's an easy choice. That's something that the Longhorn Network, you know, I don't know much about it, but from what I understand, is it was not even working out for Texas. So that was not probably something that they fought to keep. And that's probably something Texas A&M, I mean, hell, that's a big reason why Texas A&M wanted to leave the Big 12 in the first place. So again, Texas A&M, you're getting a lot of the things you wanted when you left the Big 12. And now Texas come crawling to you, and they won't have their network to hang over your head. And speaking of these hearings, man, I had to throw this one out there. But one of the senators there from Texas, during this hearing, one of the Texas state senators, Lois Kolkhorst, I hope I'm saying that right. I have no idea. Man, did she roast the Texas president here. Check it out.
But what's your athletic budget?
It's over $200 million. It's probably $220, $225 in that range.
Where does that put you in the U.S.?
Depending on how you count, probably first.
And that's without a winning football team of late.
It's in spite of our football team. We've been winning, just not like we like to win.
3-7 against the Horned Frogs. Maybe your fan base would rather lose to Alabama than TCU, so.
Oh, my goodness. But these are actual comments from a Texas board meeting, whatever the hell it's called down there. But, goodness, they're fired up down there that Texas is leaving, and there's no better no better example of that than those comments right there from a state senator to Texas President Jay Hartzell. I mean, that was just incredible. All right, so enough spieling from me, though. Let's kick it over to our interview with Adam Luckett of Kentucky Sports Radio. Hey, well, we're pleased now to be joined by Adam Luckett, Kentucky Sports Radio. He's been on the show once before. You got to give him a follow at Adam Luckett, KSR on Twitter. And he's the host of the best Kentucky podcast out there, the 11 Personnel, with one of the other friends of the show, Nick Roush. So thanks for joining me, Adam. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the kind words. I know you had Roush on here a couple weeks ago, so you had to do the double dip for the 11 Personnel. You had to finish this out. So glad to join you, my man. It's just the calendar just turned to August, and that means we get football this month. So an exciting time for us and all of your listeners, really. The long off season is almost over.
Yeah, without a doubt. And of course, hey man, you've officially made it because you were on SEC Network. You were the man that called, asked Nick Saban about 12 personnel, and he was asking you about it.
Hey Nick, Adam Luckett, Kentucky Sports Radio. Dave Aranda last week at Big 12 Media Day said defenses now are getting more aggressive, getting negative plays, tackles for loss, sacks are more important. So he thinks that an evolution might be 12 personnel, 13 personnel, wide zone. Do you kind of see that, the college game going that way, or is it still important to spread it out and hit explosives in the vertical pass game?
What is 12 personnel? You know, I got to get up. Two tight ends?
Yes, sir.
And two wide receivers or one? I'm just kidding. I know what 12 personnel is. So.
I wanted to get your thoughts, man, because, you know, I try not to suck up to the guests too much, but I really think if I'm grading you on your media days, you did A+ in your first ever appearance down there in Hoover. What was it like just covering that event?
Thanks, man. I mean, this was like a career goal for me, I guess you would say, when I started kind of going after, like, dabbling, I guess, in sports media, I guess would be the right term.
Mm-hmm.
That was always like, if I can, like, to me, I was like, if I can get there, then I know I've kind of, I don't necessarily made it's the right word, but I've really reached a level for me. So going there, I was, you know, I was pretty much all in. Like, I'm going there and I'm going to do it right. I'm going to ask questions. I don't get to talk to these coaches hardly ever. I feel like they don't, what I'm interested in, I don't think gets asked a lot, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I come from a obviously different background. I didn't have no real journalism background. I just picked up and started writing about football one day, long story short. And so, you know, I think I've got some good answers on that. I thought Lane Kiffin, in the analytics answer he went into, I thought that was really good. I wrote about that for KSR. I mean, this is stuff like that I find very interesting. And then the Saban thing, man, that was a whirlwind. I was hearing from people I haven't heard from in 10 years, and Twitter, Facebook, all that was going off. My text messages were crazy that day. My mom actually called me like 15 minutes after it happened. Cause she saw the clip and she was like, is she mad at you? Is he going to get you thrown out of the SEC media days? I'm like, mom, no, this is good for me. But quick side story, that wasn't even the question I was going to ask Mike, because I originally was going to ask about, you know, the NFL type background, because we've seen a lot of new coordinators come directly from the NFL this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And someone asked that like three questions before it got to me. And when Saban's in there, you put your hand up. You're lucky if they call on you. And there's a lot of people want to ask him questions. So I was like, you know, they get to me and I'm like, I do want to ask him something, at least throw something out there, see what I can get.
Mm-hmm.
And so that question had been something I'd gone over with Liam Cohen, Kentucky's offensive coordinator. And the really reason I asked that was because I kind of asked him about play action, everything under center. And he was like, well, I believe you don't have to necessarily get under center because some of the stuff Sark did with Alabama. And I knew doing some film study on them, I knew they used a lot of 12 personnel. So I was just kind of – and then Dave Aranda had those comments about how he thought it may be like a new wrinkle offense is going to use. So I figured I would ask him that, and then it turned into what it turned into, which was – everybody having a good laugh there in the media room, but I did think he gave a pretty good answer after the fact. And then pulling my chain a little bit on SEC Network and all that, but that was cool with me. It was just a whirlwind, I guess is the best way to put it. It was a crazy, crazy moment for me. And I think a lot of people got a good kick out of it.
So just to confirm on the record, Adam Luckett, did you go to Hoover trying to go viral with this clip here?
No, man, I really didn't. I swear I didn't. I was going into the event like just like let me ask some questions. Like obviously, you know, in our career, if you go viral, it's good for the most part. And so that's obviously what you know you're looking for. But I didn't like when I hand was up for Saban, I did not think I would get that. I thought he would give an answer like he gave. He would be like, yeah, yes and no kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which is what most coaches do. But I kind of asked Shane Beamer a similar question earlier in the week, and he kind of just gave me a little bit of a runaround, which, I mean, that's what you – it's right. Part of the game, you know. But, you know, he did he did give me – put me on a ride for sure. But, man, it was just crazy. But that's just kind of what – I mean, you can't be scared in this business. You got to – you know, they're just guys, a bunch of guys talking ball at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well – aside from your first time at Hoover, you know, you did so well. Who else? Any first year? Well, of course, you know, some of the second year guys, too. It was also their mm-hmm. first time. I'm right. thinking Leach and Kiffin. And I know he was there with Tennessee, but completely different. Is there anyone that stood out to you as really having a strong performance at SEC Media Days? And by God, you cannot say Brian Harsin.
No. That I mean, the whole ballroom was about asleep when Brian was going on. But two guys for me really stood out, and the new guys. Lane Kiffin was obviously – I thought he was really good. Mike Leach, you know, he lived up to his billing. I mean, he's this quirky guy, and he's going to give, you know, weird answers and whatnot. But I thought Shane Beamer was good. I think what he did really good was he had – like, I think it's fair to think South Carolina's going to have a rough season this year, but he did a very good job of hitting the selling points of the program, hitting where they're focusing on right now and where they're going forward. Now, it's going to be rough this year, but I thought he did a good job of kind of just selling South Carolina football. And then Eli Drinkwitz, I thought, was really good. You can see why they're having a lot of success on the recruiting trail right now. Like, they've got a bunch of blue-chip commits. They're on pace to have like a top 15 to top 20 type class right now. I don't think it's something a lot of people are talking about, but that's kind of what they're doing. And then combined with what he did last year on the field, going 5-5 was really an overachievement for them. I think you could see why he's having some recruiting success and why he could be a guy that's really kind of, if they have another big year here, 2021, he's going to be a hot commodity, I think, in the coaching ranks.
Has Nick Roush backed off his Dorkowitz nickname for
him? Yeah, we actually talked about that down there. He was like, man, Adam, man, I think I'm gonna have to back off on this, man. So he, you know, then that's gonna be a big game now, week two there when Missouri comes to Lexington and take on Kentucky. But yeah, I mean, I just think he's because it's kind of weird here in Kentucky because Louisville hired Scott Satterfield from App State.
Mm-hmm.
And now you see what Drinkwitz is doing at Missouri with App State. It's kind of got you wondering, like, did they hire the wrong App State coach because of what he's doing so far? He's hitting a lot of early checkpoints. I think if you're a Missouri fan, I think you got to be pretty excited.
Now, one of my favorite things, you know, you don't just cover Kentucky. You do a hell of a job doing that, but you cover, you know, the entire SEC and some other teams outside of the SEC. So You were pretty vocal with the all-SEC ballot and some of the issues you had with it. Could you run, you know, some of the things that stood out to you? Could you rehash those for the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. First off, how they group these teams makes no sense. You go through a roster, you see a guy is listed as a guard. He's listed as a tackle. It's two different positions. They just kind of clump them together. So you get to a point where you have like four tackles on a team and not any guards or vice versa. Linebackers are the same way. And then the secondary is the same way. So you get a disproportionate amount of one position over the other. I think we're smart enough, like as football people in general, that we should be able to pick or with a little bit of research, kind of be like, all right, these are the best corners in the league. These are the best safeties. These are the best outside linebackers. These are best inside linebackers. These are best tackles. These are best guards. And so that's frustrating to me when they do this, because I do think these teams, I mean, they matter. Like if Kentucky has a guy, first team all SEC, like he gets a plaque on the wall in the football facility. And they give out a media guy that has all the first team all SEC guys there when you go to Hoover. I mean, I think that's a big deal. At least it is to me. I think that there should be, but that should be more important. Like in the, when people in the draft community, they don't really look at all SEC teams because of how the selection process is. I just think we should change it. Like it should be a legitimate team, and we should have one center, two guards, two tackles. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like right. that. That's the stuff that bugs me. And then the, you know, biases go into that. Alabama players get benefits of the doubt. Like one of my big ones was I thought N'Kobe Dean for Georgia, I thought he was better than Henry To'oTo'o last year. I thought it was pretty clear from where I sit. And Dean was third team. Henry To'oTo'o was third team or first team, excuse me. It's just little things like that kind of irk me. Chris Rodriguez was running back six. I'm sure you're going to ask me about Rodriguez, but that's just a joke. I mean, there's no metric that shows that he's not one of the either number one or number two back in the SEC, unless you're just going off helmet logo and recruiting rankings. Those are the only two metrics he probably falls behind in. Everything else, he checks every box. So those are the things that irk me. But there's a more efficient way to do those. And that's really the issue I have with it more than anything.
Now I am going to get you, ask you about Kentucky, but before we get to that, I wanted to hit on a couple SEC East teams and starting the team I have at the top. I want to see if you do too, the Georgia Bulldogs. Is there any way that you see that they don't win the East this year?
It's hard for me to see it. I just think they have the best roster. I think they have the best roster in the league this year, talent wise. I think that might be the best roster in the country. You look at them from top to bottom. They've got it on the line of scrimmage. They've got receivers. They've got a quarterback with experience and with legit blue chip talent. That's something they didn't have last year until Daniels took over for Stetson Bennett. They've got a bunch of running backs. They've got coordinator, back-to-back years, same system in place, coordinator stability with Todd Monken coming back. It just kind of feels like that it's time, you know, it's time for them to finally break through. We'll see how they were still a little bit more run heavy towards the end of last year. I think Kirby Smart's going to have to like let loose the leash a little bit and let them just go on offense. But it just feels like the time. And when you look at the East, man, like Georgia's just heads and shoulders above people, just talent wise on the roster. And then Florida is resetting. And Florida's the next one, I would think, talent-wise. But for Florida to really get them, I think, and for them to be a contender, the way they recruit under Mullen is they just have to have a guy at quarterback. They've got to have one of the best quarterbacks in the country. If they have that, they can play with anybody. And I think that's what we saw last year. But when they don't have that, then they're closer to Kentucky than Georgia, I think, in my opinion. So, and I think this is kind of the reset year. I know a lot of people are bigger on Emory Jones, but there was a lot of surrounding pieces that made that offense great with Trask if they don't have any more. It just feels like kind of a reset year there in Gainesville. And then I think after that, you're right there at Kentucky, Missouri, however you feel about those two teams. And then after that, I think it's another level. I mean, it's all teams kind of rebuilding and kind of trying to find themselves in year one under new regime. So it's really kind of a transition year in the East. But then you have Georgia and that this ridiculous amount of talent Kirby Smart's collected, both out of high school recruiting and from the portal. And it just feels like it's their time to strike with everything going on around the league.
Well, speaking of Emory Jones, you know, that was one thing that stood out to me about Dan Mullen's appearance at Media Days. It seemed it didn't matter who he was talking to. He was hyping up Emory Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, you know, he really believes that, or do you think he's trying to build confidence in Emory Jones? I mean, you know, that's a tough thing to say, but maybe just based on what you've seen, are you seeing the same things that Dan Mullen is?
Dan Mullen's a cocky dude now. Like, I think he believes a lot of the stuff that comes out of his mouth, and a lot of it, you know, we've seen is some stupid stuff sometimes. Just down there in Hoover, he said they'd never pick us, and literally the year before, they picked him to win the league. So I really think he believes that because, I mean, he does, I think, consider himself a quarterback guru, one of the best offensive coaches, and he carries himself like that. So I do think he thinks he has a chance to have Emory Jones be a pretty good piece. What I worry about is their offensive line just hasn't been great, hasn't been able to really control the line of scrimmage. And if they're going to transition to more of like this Mississippi State power run-based attack that we saw in Starkville, and less what we saw last year, what does that look like if they're not really up to snuff there on the line of scrimmage? I think they could have some struggles there. And then there's all the defensive questions that are looming over there with Grantham. There's a lot of unknown, I think, for Florida. So, yeah, to answer your question, yes, I think Mullen thinks he's got a good quarterback, but I have my doubts about the surrounding pieces for Florida. And it just feels like a transition year. Last year, they were great. I mean, everybody gets caught up in the three-game losing streak, but before that, they were legit, I think, top five team. You know, and that was a really good year for Mullen. It just some sour grapes and how it ended. But I think even all last year, if you would have talked to a Florida fan when they were, you know, 5-1 or whatever, they'd have been like, yeah, this feels like a year we need to strike because next year is probably going to be a little bit of reset. And that's what it just feels like to me what they're headed towards.
Now, you kind of hit on this already, but that Kentucky versus Missouri, week two of the season in Lexington, it's going to be a new system for Kentucky on the offensive side of the ball, new defensive system for Missouri. So,
right.
How do you rate this game and just the level of importance for both teams, really? And, you know, considering the newness on both sides of the ball for those teams, do you see an advantage one way or another, or is it just kind of tough to predict what each team has here?
As far as importance goes, Mike, like when you're trying to kind of project in the season, if you're Kentucky and Missouri, you're looking at the year and you're going through your schedule, you can get to 8-4. Like you're looking at your schedule, you can get to 8-4. And when you're 8-4 in the SEC East, that's an Outback Bowl bid more times than not. And then you're a win away against a big team in Tampa from finishing the season in the top 25. Mm-hmm. And for Kentucky and Missouri, those are big seasons. Those are really seasons you can build off of and have a lot of recruiting success. We saw Kentucky and Mark Stoops. He ended up having his best class right after they won 10 games, finished ranked. And in that, I think, presents a big opportunity if you're both of those programs. But to get there, you have to beat the other one. I don't think there's any getting around that, at least to me. And it's real early in the season. You talk about the two new coordinators. First week, each team has a game against a team they're pretty superior to them. So it's going to be a lot of not showing much in those games. So there's going to be a lot of unknown going into that game. Drinkwitz talked about this in Hoover. It's going to be his first time at Missouri having to play on the road against like a real road environment in a big game at night. And you talk to people around the Kentucky program, like that Missouri game got in their craw a little bit last year. Like they are pretty, like they get upset when you ask them about that Missouri game because they feel like they were the better team and they went there. A lot was going on with John Schlarman. That was the first game he missed.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to pass a few weeks later after they went and won at Tennessee. So, and then when you watch, if you went back and watched that game, it was a real aggravating game. Missouri just kept getting short third downs and was able to convert and kind of own the game where Kentucky's – that was really maybe the first or second big game where you were like, Eddie Graham might be in trouble if this is what they're doing. So I think there's no getting around how big that game is. And then from just a matchup standpoint, my thing in this, I just think Kentucky has a better roster. I think Missouri has a better quarterback. I just think Kentucky has a better roster. So when you go down the line, I think Kentucky should expect to win that game. You're at home, second game of the year. I think you should expect to – I think Kentucky's a better team. They should take care of that game. But you mentioned the wild card is Liam Cohen and Steve Wilks. Like Cohen's coming in with, like, this McVay blueprint. It's got people excited. But, you know, like, what I've been telling people, you know, we can talk about it, but we don't know until we see it. Like, I have to see – we have to see it, you know, him actually call plays and them score points before you can get too up or down about it. And I think Wilks is the same way. I mean, it's just different in college. It's going to be different level of defense he's going to have to call. He's obviously more experienced, so that may give him a little bit of an advantage. But there's a lot of unknown. But overall, that game, I just don't think you can get around the magnitude of that matchup. I think it's one of the bigger games in the SEC early in the year just because of that. Because the winner of that is going to be positioned to make some noise. Like, they're going to be positioned to host a game or play a big game where they're potentially in the top 25 playing a contender. And then that's a game where people are going to pay more attention to. So, but to get there first, they got to get through each other. And so whoever wins that's going to be best set up to make more noise later in the season.
Now, one of the things you wrote about on Kentucky Sports Radio, you talked to a lot of these coaches, obviously, there in Hoover, asked them about the line of scrimmage. And that certainly looks to be a strength for Kentucky this year. You know, how big can that be for the Wildcats in terms of just an advantage in SEC play next season?
Yeah, I mean, you talk to anybody in the league. I mean, I talked to Josh Heupel. I've talked to Shane Beamer, talked about it. Drinkowitz talked about it. Really, all the new coaches to the league, they all talk about, like, that it's just different here. And so it's something you have to get right. Once you get that right, then you can do what you want. Now, Kentucky's got – they've gotten it right, especially on the offensive side of the ball here lately. I mean, they've – you look at some of how, you know, PFF or some other people grade offensive line play – they're right up there, especially in the run game. You look at Darian Kennard. I mean, he's as good as a run-blocking offensive tackle as you're going to find in college football. And he's a pretty good pass-blocking one at that, too. He's a guy, if he puts it all together here, he could be a first-round draft pick. Darryl Rosenthal is an LSU transfer. He's still got to earn a spot. But you listen to Ed Orgeron and some of his LSU teammates in Hoover, and they talked about him like that's a guy you want on your team in the line with you. Luke Fortner's a six-year super senior. He's got NFL potential. Was one of the best run-blocking players in the SEC last year. And then they got a bunch of other guys with some experience. And so that can be – when you team that with Chris Rodriguez, I think that can be a recipe for success. If you just have any small passing game at all, and it can really help your quarterback out, I think that's the blueprint for Kentucky, is to really kind of still be a run-heavy approach, but to have some misdirection and some play action off of that run heavy stuff so you can keep defenses honest. And if you can do that with the way Mark Stoops and Brad White have built their defenses the last couple of years, that's going to keep you in games and it's going to give you a chance in the fourth quarter. You just need to – every once in a while you need to hit on some explosive fast plays, which is something they just really struggled at. And if they can do that, then they're going to get into games late, and they've proven that they can win close games, in which – you know, but that's all you can ask for. You got to get in those games late. Last year, they weren't able to do that against some teams because the offense was just so anemic with the passing game. I mean, you look back to that Georgia game in the regular season, like that game was just, I mean, it was rock 'em, sock 'em robots. Both teams beat the crap out of each other. It just, Kentucky had no pass game at all. So even though Chris Rodriguez was running for over 100 plus yards, they really had just had no chance of that game because of some of the offensive ineptitude. And I think the Florida game was kind of the same way. They hung in there against Florida. The defense did. I thought it's just they had no offense. So if they can kind of get some offense going with a top six or seven defense in the league, they're going to have a chance to really make some noise, I think.
You mentioned Chris Rodriguez. I had Nick Roush on the show, and bold prediction from Nick. And I listened to the 11 personnel, so I already know where you stand on this. Share with the listeners why you agree with Nick, thinking that Chris Rodriguez is in for a huge season for Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, Liam Cohen has already came out and said, you know, we're getting him 25-plus touches a game. And you combine that with, the offensive line that he's running behind. And then you look at just some of the advanced numbers and the stats. I mean, you could even look at raw yards per carry number. They've been really good, but he hasn't gotten a full workload yet. And nothing to me has shown that he's going to slow down with a full workload. I think he's going to kind of continue that over. And if he's putting those numbers together, you're looking at a guy that's going to rush for 1,600 yards or so and 20 touchdowns, which will be you know, will be up there leading the league, and it's going to be right up there for All-American contention. Now we'll have to see, like, this new, the new running scheme is going to be different, but nothing leads me to believe that he's not going to have a big year. I think he's, I said all last year, he's probably the most efficient offensive player in college football. You just got kind of lost in a wash on a bad Kentucky offense. If they can keep that up this year, and then you get Wandell Robinson kind of going in the passing game, you find any life at all in the passing game, I think you're really going to have something with that offense. But to answer your question, like, Rodriguez has got a chance to set the single season mark, Kentucky rushing.
Nick guaranteed it, just so you
Nick
know.
Guaranteed. Nick, he's going to go out. See, Mike, I did write a little piece on this. I was like, because in my head I was thinking it, but then when I kind of wrote the numbers down, I was like, man, it's going to, like, it's going to be a little, I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, the number, I think the number is like 1,600 and something. Mm-hmm. But I think he's got a chance. I think he's got a really, really good chance at it. And I think he's due for a pretty big season, because the difference between him and Benny Snell, is he's got a little more burst. Like, we've seen him bust off a run or two, 50, 60 yarder. And that's something we never really saw from Snell. That kind of makes him different. So I think he's definitely, like, I'd be pretty surprised if he wasn't a first team All-SEC back at the end of the year. And I think he's got a real chance to compete for All-American honors.
Now, another recent article you had on Kentucky Sports Radio was on the smaller personnel that the Wildcats are going to be breaking out on defense. So can you explain that a little further? And you got a breakout candidate, because it seems like every dang year Kentucky's got one or two guys on that defensive side of the ball that, you know, it seems like the NFL has no idea who they are. And then here comes draft, and then they're
right.
They got a top 15 pick on the team.
Right. Yeah. Basically, long story short, Kentucky's just thin at edge, at outside linebacker. And against Florida last year, J.J. Weaver, who was a big four-star recruit for the program out of Louisville, he tore his ACL. So now he's working out. It's sounding like he's going to be ready to play week one. But you have to be careful coming off that, you know, a major knee injury like that. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that, they're just very thin there at outside linebacker. But they're not thin at safety. Yusuf Corker, I think, is a guy he could be a guy you look up and he's around the league leading tackles. He's just making a lot of plays, and you're just like, oh wow, he's pretty good. Devontae Robinson was a guy in 2018, was really came on strong. He 2019 training camp, he had a quadriceps injury, like tore his quad or whatever. It's a long journey back. Even like in training camp last year, Stoops was like, well, he's still not really ready. He's still not 100%. Well, he came back for a super senior season. He's a guy I will watch out, because he can test off the chart. And, he's got a lot of range, and I think he could be a guy that they kind of use as kind of when they do some of these, I think, dime looks and use maybe him as like a linebacker or something. I think he's going to be one to definitely watch. A young player, Vito Tisdale, flashed last year and has really had some – you know, light eyeball moments where, I mean, he can really deliver a blow. He's got a lot of speed. Now, how they fit him in is going to be interesting, because him and Robinson are kind of in the same mold. But there's just no physical way that they can play their best 11 without having, you know, playing three or four safeties at a time. And so how they decide to use those guys is going to be really fascinating. That, for me, is kind of what I'm going to be paying attention to early. And I think it could catch some people by surprise early in the season with how they're using their personnel on defense, because it might be different than anything they've done in the past.
All right, last question for you, Adam. I really appreciate all the time. Who do you think starts at quarterback for Kentucky, even if it's just a guess, against Louisiana Monroe?
Yeah, I think it's Will Levis. I think the writing's on the wall there a little bit. Liam Cohen got this job, got to Lexington, and it didn't take him long to go hit the portal. They're both from New England. They've got a little background. Bruce Feldman of The Athletic wrote a big piece on Cohen kind of being the next, you know, Joe Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back a few weeks later and wrote a post about Will Levis transferring, kind of being the next guy. I think it's going to take a lot for Gatewood to beat out Will Levis. I just think they're just kind of – I think when you hire a new offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator, you're hiring him, and when you're a seasoned set coach that comfortable in your position, like Mark Stoops is, but you realizing that your offense is broken, you're picking this guy and you're like, you fix it, do whatever you got to do to fix it, but you got to give him some flexibility on that. And I think this is kind of what that is. You're going to go let him get his guy. and just we'll see and turn him loose and see what they can do. But from all accounts, Gatewood did make a big strides in the spring. So we'll see what happens in the summer or in fall camp here starting up later this week. But right now I feel pretty comfortable saying Levis is going to be the guy, but you know how that stuff goes, you know, you just never know until you go through it. But all signs kind of point to Will Levis being QB1 for Kentucky when they open up the season on Labor Day weekend.
Oh yeah. And I forgot real quick, plug what you guys are doing because you're partnering up now with On3 Sports.
Yeah.
So
some really great news for us. Yeah. KSR is now a member of On3 Sports. Shannon Terry, who started Rivals, started 247. It's like his new venture. So we're all launching this week. There's a bunch of sites launching. We got a Clemson site, Ohio State site. We're going to have, we're going to have a recruiting database ranking. That's really going to be some state of the art type stuff coming later in October. It's not much I can really say about it right now, but it's going to be a big deal when that thing comes out. And so we're just building up a team right now for KSR. None of our coverage is changing. This is just going to give us more resources and access to do stuff even better than we've done in the past. But it's real exciting. Ivan Maisel of ESPN formerly, he's kind of our big national writer. We've got Chad Simmons running our recruiting operation, who originally came from Rivals, was kind of their chief guy. And so we got a really good team of people together working, and we're just doing some really great things. And I think it's I'm highly excited about it, and I highly endorse it. I think you should come check us out. I'm doing some writing for our Clemson site right now, clemsonsports.com. So there's a lot of good stuff going on. And, this season we're really ramping up, but then we're going to keep building momentum. And next year is really going to be where we'll be in full swing. But right now we're launching, and it's an exciting time for us over here at KSR.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Adam, thanks so much. I really appreciate all the time you spent with us. And I think our fans are really going to appreciate it.
No problem, Mike. Anytime. Thanks for having me on, man.
All right. Just want to say thanks again to Adam for joining the show. I hope you guys really appreciated that and able to hit on a number of the SEC teams. And he does a terrific job. If you're not following him already, Adam Luck at KSR, give him a follow. Check out his work at Kentucky Sports Radio. And I can't wait to see what they got cooked up there at On3 Sports. That sounds like a very interesting, that's a new website that they just launched it, but I think it's going to be a huge player just like the rest of these in the college football realm. So got to check that out. But hey, that's going to do it for this episode. And as always, if you made it this far, give us that 5-star written review on the Apple Podcast app. And if you send that on over, show us your review, send that on over to thatsecpodcast@gmail.com. We'll send you your beer koozie free of charge just for doing that. That's just our way of saying thanks for each and every one of you listeners for writing us that review, and it's absolutely free. So we really do appreciate all the loyal listeners. And now that football is here, our numbers are driving up. We're top 20 in the Apple Podcast app for football. So couldn't be happier with all that's going on there. But I'm rambling, so just like Cousin Shade, I'm going to jump off the line. Appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out, and we'll catch you on the next one.